Monday. On Monday, Joshua led us through the Golden Gate into Jerusalem. But this time, there were no palm fronds laid on the road, and no one was singing hosannas. Well, there was this one guy, but he was always singing hosannas at the Golden Gate. If you gave him a coin, he'd stop for a while. "It would be nice to be able to buy a little something for breakfast," Judas said, "if the Magdalene hadn't spent all of our money."
"Joshua smells nice, though," Nathaniel said. "Don't you think Joshua smells nice?"
Sometimes you find yourself grateful for the most unlikely things. Right then, when I saw Judas grit his teeth and the vein stand out on his forehead, I said a quick prayer of thanks for Nathaniel's naivete.
"He does smell nice," said Bartholomew. "It makes one want to reassess one's values regarding the material comforts."
"Thank you, Bart," said Joshua.
"Yes, there's nothing like a good-smelling man," said John dreamily.
Suddenly, we were all very uncomfortable, and there was a lot of throat clearing and coughing, and we all walked a few paces farther apart. I haven't told you about John, have I? Then John started to make a great and pathetic show of noticing the women as they passed. "Why, that little heifer would give a man some strong sons," John said in a booming and falsely masculine voice. "A man could surely plant some seed there, he could."
"Please shut up," James said to his brother.
"Maybe," said Philip, "you could have your mother come over and tell that woman to cleave unto you."
Everyone snickered, even Joshua. Well, everyone except James.
"You see," he said to his brother, "you see what you've started, you little Nancy?"
"There's a nubile wench," exclaimed John unconvincingly. He pointed to a woman who was being dragged toward the city gates by a group of Pharisees, her clothes hanging in shreds on her body, which indeed appeared to be nubile. So credit to John for working outside of his element.
"Block the road," Joshua said.
The Pharisees came up to our human blockade and stopped.
"Let us pass, Rabbi," the oldest of them said. "This woman has been caught in the act of adultery this very day, and we're taking her out of the city to be stoned, as is the law."
The woman was young, and her hair fell in dirty curls around her face. Terror had twisted her face, and her eyes were rolled back in her head. But an hour or so ago, she had probably been pretty. Joshua crouched and began writing in the dust at his feet.
"What's your name?" he asked.
"Jamal,"
said the leader. I watched Joshua write the man's name, then next to it, a list of sins.
"Wow, Jamal," I said. "A goose? I didn't even know that was possible."
Jamal dropped the adulteress's arm and stepped back. Joshua looked up at the other man who was holding the woman.
"And your name?"
Steve,
said that man.
"His name is not Steve," said another man in the crowd. "It's Jacob."
Joshua wrote Jacob in the dust.
"No,"
said Jacob. He let go of the woman, pushing her toward us. Then Joshua stood up and took the stone from the man nearest him, who surrendered it easily. His attention was focused on the list of sins written in the dirt.
"Now let us stone this harlot," Joshua said. "Whoever of you is without sin, cast the first stone."
And he held out the stone to them. They gradually backed away. In a moment, they had all gone back the way they had come, and the adulteress fell to Joshua's feet and hugged his ankles.
"Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you so much."
"That's okay," said Joshua. He lifted her to her feet. "Now go and sin no more."
"You really smell good. You know that?" she said.
"Yeah, thanks. Now go."
She started off.
"I should make sure she gets home okay," I said. I started off after her, but Joshua caught the back of my tunic and pulled me back. "You missed the sin no more part of my instructions?"
"Look, I've already committed adultery with her in my heart, so, you know, why not enjoy it?"
"No.
You're the one who set the standards. By those rules, even John committed adultery with her in his heart, and he doesn't even like women."
"Do too," said John.
"To the temple," Joshua said, pressing on.
Waste of a perfectly good adulteress, if you ask me.
In the outer court of the temple, where the women and the Gentiles were allowed to go, Joshua called us all together and began to preach the kingdom. Each time he would get started, a vendor would come by barking, "Get your doves! Get your sacrificial doves! Pure as the driven snow! Everybody needs one!" Then Joshua would begin again, and the next vendor would come by. "Unleavened bread! Get your unleavened bread! Only one shekel! Piping hot matzah! Just like Moses ate on the way out of Egypt! Only fresher!" And a little girl, who was lame, was brought to Joshua, and he started to heal her and ask her about her faith when,
"Your denarii's changed to shekels while you wait. No amount too large or small. Drachmas to talents, talents to shekels. All your money changed while you wait."
"Do you believe that the Lord loves you?" Joshua asked the little girl.
"Bitter herbs, get your bitter herbs," cried a vendor.
"Damn it all," Joshua screamed in frustration. "You're healed, child. Now get out of here." He waved off the little girl, who got up and walked for the first time in her life. Then he slapped a dove vendor, ripped the top off his cage of birds, and released a cloud of doves into the sky. "This is a house of prayer, not a den of thieves." "Oh no, not the money changers," Peter whispered to me. Joshua grabbed a long, low table where men were changing a dozen currencies into shekels, the only coin allowed for commerce inside the temple complex. And he flipped it over. "Oh, that's it. He's fucked," Philip said. And he was. The priests took a big percentage from the money changers. He might have slid by before, but now he'd interfered with their income.
"Out, you vipers! Out!"
Joshua had taken a coil of rope from one of the vendors and was using it as a scourge to drive the vendors and the money changers out of the temple gates. Nathaniel and Thomas had joined in Joshua's tirade, kicking at the merchants as they scampered away. But the rest of us sat staring or ministered to those who had come to hear Joshua speak.
"We should stop this," I said to Peter. "You think you could stop this?"
Peter nodded to the corner of the courtyard, where at least 20 priests had come out from the inner temple to watch the fracas.
"He's going to bring down the wrath of the priests on all of us," Judas said.
He was looking at the temple guards, who had stopped pacing the walls and were watching the goings-on below in the courtyard. To Judas's credit, he, Simon, and a few of the others had managed to calm the small crowd of the faithful who had gathered to be blessed and healed before Joshua's tantrum. Beyond the walls of the temple, we could see the Roman soldiers staring down from the battlements of Herod the Great's old palace, which the governor commandeered during feast weeks when he brought the legions to Jerusalem. The Romans didn't enter the temple unless they sensed insurrection, but if they entered, Jewish blood would be spilled. Rivers of it.
"They won't come in," Peter said, a tiny note of doubt in his voice. "They can see that this is a Jewish matter. They don't care if we kill each other."
"Just watch Judas and Simon," I said. "If one of them starts with that no master but God thing, the Romans will come down like an executioner's blade." Finally, Joshua was out of breath, soaked in sweat, and barely able to swing the coil of rope he was carrying. But the temple was clear of merchants. A large crowd had started to follow him, shouting at the vendors as Joshua drove them out of the temple. The crowd, probably 800 to 1,000 people, was the only thing that kept the priests from calling the guards down on Joshua right then. Josh tossed the rope aside and led the crowd back to where we had been watching in horror.
"Thieves!"
he said to us breathlessly as he passed. Then he went to a little girl with a withered arm who had been waiting beside Judas.
"Pretty scary, huh?" Joshua said to her.
She nodded. Joshua put his hands over her withered arm.
"Are those guys in the tall hats coming over here?"
She nodded again.
"Here, can you make this sign with your finger?"
He showed her how to stick out her middle finger.
"No, not with that hand, with this one."
Joshua took his hand away from her withered arm, and she wiggled her fingers. The muscle and tendons had filled out until it looked identical to her other arm.
"Now,"
Joshua said. Make that sign. That's good. Now show it to those guys behind me with the tall hats. That's a good girl.